It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm Charles Wolforth. On a beautiful day in Anchorage when that snow is just glistening and it really makes you want to get outside on skis or maybe on a snow machine or maybe one person on skis being pulled by a snow machine. How does that sound? We're talking about Arctic Man today, and Arctic Man is this incredible competition that is truly an only Alaska event. It happens up in the Alaska Range in the middle of April, and it involves a snow machine pulling a skier watched by maybe 10,000 of their best friends, a huge sort of Arctic Man city that forms up there. And we're going to talk with one of the winningest riders from Arctic Man and also from somebody who's been up there for many a visit. And if we can make the communications work, we're going to have the race director calling in from the scene. We'll see. It's obviously a little complicated to call from that remote area. So, and we would love to hear from you. You know, have you ever been to Arctic Man? You know, what's it like? What's your favorite thing about it? If you want to get on the air with us, the phone number in Anchorage is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-357-5752. And if you send us a message on Facebook, we will read that on the air and ask our guests. Just go to Outdoor Explorer on Facebook. So our guest in the studio today, Len Story, is a rider. Maybe the most wins of any rider in Arctic Man history, or you didn't want to cop to that when I talked to you before.
Well, we have 5 wins in the men's ski division and 1 win in the snowboard division. So there's a couple other drivers and skiers out there that have won multiple Arctic Mans in the past, but we've done pretty well over the years.
Not bad. I think I just gave the phone number wrong, so I'm going to try to give that again. It's 550-8433 in Anchorage. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And Tina Deptulis is here as well, and she's been to Arctic Man many, many times and goes up with a big tent and with lots of people. And I wanted to have Tina here just to tell us about how fun it is to go. And it sounds like it's a blast.
It is a blast.
What's your favorite thing about it? What makes you keep going back?
Oh, I think just all of the friendship, and we do a lot of big meals where there's probably usually between 30 and 40 in our group, and we all kind of pitch in and do different meals, theme type meals. And
so like 30 and 40 friends who all have their own RVs and just park together up there?
Yes.
And then you had a big tent that you set up?
We do. We have a 20 by 20 foot tent. It's got heaters in it. Usually stays about 70 degrees in there all the time. And it's got a fireplace in it, and we kind of have all the luxuries of home.
That sounds great. And I mean, do you spend a lot of time watching the competition and getting out yourself, or are you more like a just stay in camp and have fun sort of person?
I'm kind of more like the stay in camp person, but most of the people in our group go up and watch the race.
Uh-huh. And everybody pretty much brings their own snow machine?
Yes.
Yeah, so I imagine it's less like people going off in every direction.
Yep. Yeah. The guys in our group go out and ride during the days. We're usually there the full week.
Uh-huh.
And the girls just kind of sit around and visit.
That's great. So, Len, I don't know if all of our listeners know what the competition really is. Because does anybody else do this, or is this just unique to hear this?
I believe it's just unique to Alaska.
Yeah. So the skier starts out and goes down a really big, you know, pretty big steep hill, right? But then when he gets to the bottom, he doesn't have to stop.
They do. The skier starts out, and it's about a mile and a half ski. They go down through the ski canyon, and the snow machiner is waiting for them, what they call the pole canyon. And the skier comes down. They're doing maybe 50, 60 miles an hour. You try to match their speed with the skier, hand them a rope, and then you tow them about 2.5 to 2.25 miles up another hill, and then you launch them off what they call first aid, and then they ski down into the finish line, which is another about 1.25 miles. So it's about a 5, 5.25 mile track that we race on.
So you're basically handing them the rope while you're still going at 50 miles an hour? Is that what you're...
We hand them the rope, and there's all kinds of different ropes up there. People use poles, they use ski ropes, they use big braided rope and all kinds of different things. We prefer a ski rope. It's a 15-foot ski rope that we attach to the back of the snow machine, and that's what we use. There's others that use the metal poles and other devices.
And you were talking before the show about the speeds that you hit.
The speeds, on a fast year, the speeds, we've got the record right now at 91.6 miles an hour of towing the skier across the top. We've had speeds on radar up there during practice around 95 miles an hour. But yeah, the speeds are usually mid to high 80s. It would be fun to see them a little bit higher than that. I like the faster trails, so.
Yeah, and when I had first heard about this, which was obviously years and years ago, I got in my mind that, well, if they're going these speeds, it's just supposed to be perfectly straight. But watching this video that we've got on our website, it looks like there's actually turns and there's quite a bit of skill that's, I mean, you're not just going straight and flat out. You got to keep your sled upright and the skier's got to navigate some turns.
There's very few flat sections of the race, and there's a lot of terrain. There's, like I said, it comes off the top, and I don't know, it probably drops 1,500 feet in that mile and a half. And then we're climbing back up. That's 3,200 feet, I think, at the bottom of Gun Creek there at the hookup. And it goes back up to the top of First Aid, which is like 5,500 feet, and then back down to the finish line, which is about 3,000 feet. So there's a lot of varying terrain for that 5 miles.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to call people's attention to this video, which is on our website. You go to alaskapublic.org and then find the headline Arctic Man City. Click on that, and you'll find this video. And just go ahead and start it here in the studio. It's like 5 minutes long. And one of the things that struck me about this, Len, is the amount of skill in terms of staying upright at these speeds. The person in this video is actually getting off on one side of the sled and leaning out to keep it stable. Is that a typical thing you would do?
It's a typical thing. For a snow machiner, for a racer with experience, it's a fairly easy race. It's only 2.5 miles of speed. So matching the speed to the skier is a critical point, and then just hitting your lines right is a real critical point for the snow machiner. And at those speeds, there's a lot of terrain, there's a lot of bumps, there's a lot mm-hmm. of corners that you've got to hit just right, and there's a lot of good riders up there that you've got to be right on your mark or you're going to get beat. So, I give the credit, you know, with Arctic Man to the skiers. The Arctic Man race is twice the length of an Olympic downhill. Typically, Olympic downhill is a minute and a half to maybe 2.5 minutes. We're racing 5 miles or just over 5 miles in just over 4 minutes. So
yeah,
pretty fast.
You can see that from the time code on the video, which we've got playing now in the studio. And I would just, anybody who's at their computer, check it out. One of the things is they get going so fast that the camera can't keep up with it after a while, and it just starts to look like the images are sort of get choppy because it's going too fast for the camera. I mean, that's just got to be an incredible rush to go at that speed.
Well, I've never been on the skis, but right. On a snow machine, it is a rush. But we do a lot of testing.
Doing the handoff there, and you can see he's going at quite a speed when he does that, and just hands it over to him. Amazing.
Yeah, and it's we practice all week, and it's quite a bit faster on race day. It's really amazing. You know, you practice all week and think they're going fast, and they come down into the hookup on race day, and it's like they gained another 10, 20 miles an hour when they come down there. So it is pretty exhilarating to try to match the speed to the skier there and handing them the rope at that point.
Yeah, really. Wow. So I've got to ask, I mean, this seems like it would be very dangerous.
Well, there's luckily there's been very few injuries at Arctic Man for the speeds and the terrain. And, you know, pulling a skier behind a snow machine, it doesn't seem like the safest thing to do. But there's been very few injuries up there. I think the majority of the injuries happen probably around First Aid where they're launching off another. It's really almost vertical at that point, and they're launching off that and catching air off of First Aid at, you know, 90 plus miles an hour.
Yeah, because they're already going really fast at the top of the hill, unlike a regular downhill race when you start out from a stop and you accelerate. They're already going really fast when they start.
We're pulling them across the top at 90 miles an hour, and then there a lot of the guys will do a whip like on water skiing where you can actually accelerate for, you know, with the whip. And coming off the top of First Aid again, you know, over 90 miles an hour.
Huh. Here he is. Here, it looks like you're coming right to the top here on the video. And you can see the snow flying up from the back of the snow machine onto the skier, which can't make it any easier. On this day, it looks like there's great visibility. If it's not perfect weather, that must add to the challenge.
And we've had the sunshine, clear sky years, and then we've had the mm-hmm. years that have been overcast with a little bit of snow. And it's so much snow up there, and it's in a canyon. There's no trees or anything mm-hmm. else, and it does get very sketchy when you have the whiteout conditions.
Oh, I bet. You couldn't see a thing. Yeah. Wow. Well, we're talking about Arctic Man, and it's a fascinating topic to me. I got an email from a listener today saying, you know, you sound like you're having so much fun on this show. Are you sure you're actually working? And no, don't tell my boss. But it is. This is something I've always been fascinated by. It's such a amazing. It seems so daring. And also the whole scene out there with the people visiting and camping. I think it's fabulous. So I'd like to hear if any listeners have been up there, what they thought of it. What was your favorite experience? And, you know, how maybe has it changed over the years? We'd love to hear from you. Get on the Outdoor Explorer, call 550-8433. That's 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, or on Facebook, Outdoor Explorer. Tina, you've been going for a long time. How has it changed? Well, what was it like in the early days when you first were going there? Just a small number of people, and was it a bit more casual?
Yeah, I don't know how many people went up there, you know, way back when.
Uh-huh.
Probably maybe a tenth of what goes there now, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But we add something to our setup every year to make it more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And everyone up there does. You kind of learn what you need through the years.
You sent us some images, and there was a karaoke sled or something. What's that all about?
One of the fellows in our group last year built a karaoke sled. It's very big, and he tows it behind his truck that he brings up, and it's got a big screen TV on it with all the words. I think he's got thousands and thousands of songs on it. It's got strobe lights and disco lights, and it's a big setup.
So this is all, you do karaoke out under the stars or something,
we do,
huh?
Yeah.
And the weather, like this time of year, it's probably not that cold, eh? It's about like 30s, 40s.
You know, during the day, if it's a sunny day, you can sit out there with a short sleeve shirt on and mm-hmm. be perfectly comfortable, because the sun reflecting off the snow, it makes it pretty warm.
Mm-hmm. You have to register and pay a fee to go up there, a camping fee or something?
You do. I think it's $130 for the whole week for your camping spot.
Mm-hmm. And for power, we're talking about karaoke and stuff like that. Do you bring up like a portable generator or something?
We just mainly plug everything into our motorhomes.
Mm-hmm.
Turn the generators on in there and plug everything to the motorhomes.
Uh-huh. Now, I guess that, you know, the party atmosphere is fairly famous, just looking at the Arctic Man website, that some of the sponsors are like Crown Royal and, you know, other alcohol. You know, is it like get really rolling at night?
It does. We kind of stick to our own area,
uh-huh.
So but you can see some pretty wild things up there.
People, yeah, I'm sure. And there's a beer tent, and I guess a bar where they're selling drinks at the beer tent.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's a big bar.
So
it's a big tent. He puts a wooden floor down. He's on a concrete pad, so but what he doesn't have concrete, he puts the wooden floor in. And it's nice and warm in there.
Yeah. Well, it sounds
big
like
bar.
Fun.
Yeah.
A lot of families with kids going up, too?
A lot of families with kids, yeah. I know my daughter and my grandkids are all coming up with us, and it's a real family.
Yeah.
A real family experience.
And everybody sort of going out and trail riding during the day. Oh, except you said the ladies were staying
behind. Yeah, not many of the ladies in our group go out.
Uh-huh.
A lot of women go out,
sure.
Of course, but but not many in our group.
Uh-huh.
We kind of like to just sit around and visit.
Yeah. Well, what are the you're out there racing, but what are the trails like around there? Or do you just sort of go cross country if you're going to explore?
Well, there's not really any trails. We go up a week ahead of time. We're going up Sunday this year, so we get a little, you know, a couple days maybe of riding time in, and hopefully Howard will have the course in where we can start practicing on Monday or Tuesday. But earlier in the week, it's unbelievable riding conditions up there. It's one of my favorite places that I've ever ridden in my life. And it sounds like there's a ton of snow up there this year, and the riding should be spectacular. So earlier you get there, the better the riding is. After everybody gets there, the trails get a little bit bumpy and things mm-hmm. get ridden out a little bit. But we've been up there in the past where, you know, it'll snow, you know, each night. So it'll, you know, cover up a lot of the tracks and, you know, provide good riding, you know, each day. But the earlier, the better.
Yeah. And in terms of the site, at some point in the past, this particular spot was chosen. And was that, do you know how it came about in the first place?
Well, my understanding, talking with Howard Thies, the promoter of the race, it was a bar bet. There used to be the Summit Lake Lodge. Mm-hmm. And before they had the parking area that they currently are at now, there was the only place to park was either at the lodge or along the highway.
Which is on the Richardson?
Which is on the Richardson, right by Isabel Pass, mm-hmm. right on the east side of Summit Lake. So you'd have, you know, 1,000, 5,000 cars and people parked along the highway. And that was before Howard plowed the road and created the camp down there. But the lodge burnt down back in, I think it was 94, the lodge had burnt down. And then that's the 95, Howard had built the pad down there and created the camp.
Mm-hmm. But who originally had the idea of doing this crazy sport?
So with the lodge there and with the bar in the lodge, it was Howard, and I'm not sure who Howard's friend was, but they were both into skiing and snow machining, so they had a bet in the bar of who could ski down, be pulled at the top of another hill and ski down to, which is currently the finish line, the fastest. So they had the bar bet, and they went up and raced it, and I believe Howard won that first race, which I think only had two teams in it at the time, and then they were sat back and said, hey, this was kind of fun, let's see if other people want to join us. And I think the first year was 86, so in 1986 they had the first Arctic Man. I'm not sure, I think there was maybe 12 competitors in the 86 Arctic Man, and then it's grown from there, and there's been I think as many as 70 teams that have competed, both in the men's ski, men's snowboard, women's ski, women's snowboard classes.
And is it like continue to get bigger every year, or does it sort of peak, reach a plateau at some point?
Well, it kind of goes up and down. It depends on, you know, the purse money that's there. I think I've heard that first place prize for the ski class is $28,000 this year, and then it goes down from there. So it's pretty good, and it's always been, you know, $10,000 to $25,000 for the first place prize for the men's skis. So that really influences the individuals that you get up there trying to compete for that.
Yeah, that's a motivation to get out there and practice and really get good at it, huh?
Yeah.
So do you spend time during the rest of the year getting ready for this, or is it just sort of when it's coming around you get out there and give it a shot?
I don't spend a lot of time getting ready for it other than, you know, preparing the machine before I go up mm-hmm. and putting all the parts and pieces together to haul up there. It's, you know, it's a 5-hour drive, so we take trucks and trailers and all of our stuff and pretty much empty out the garage into a trailer to take it up there mm-hmm. because once you get there, you're there and don't have a lot of resources.
You better have your tools ready.
You got to have your tools ready. Eric Heil, my partner, he's sponsored by Alyeska Resorts, so he gets to go down early in the morning and make several speed runs. So he does that pretty much all winter long to get his legs in shape. And again, that's the hardest part of the race, the skiers. I give a ton of credit to those guys. I mean, the athleticism and what they go through is incredible to me.
So he goes down to the resort before it opens because he can't ski like that when people are around.
No, they would kind of frown on that.
Yeah, because I mean he's just going as fast as he could possibly go.
As fast as he can go. Yeah, he pretty much tucks from the top of the hill to the bottom and then gets back on the chairlift and goes and does it again.
Uh huh. We were talking a little bit about do you need a special kind of snow machine to do this, and it sounds like it's a factory machine basically.
Well, it's limited to 600cc mm-hmm. or I think 1,000cc if it's a four-stroke. Those machines run around 130 to 140 horsepower, so they're trying to keep the speeds down. If it was unlimited and you had 200 horsepower out there, the guys would be going across the top at 100 miles an hour, mm-hmm. which would be all right with me, but I don't know if the skiers would like that much. But they're limited to 600cc, so it's a stock sled, so most of them are what the consumers can get off the showroom floor, although most of the manufacturers do make a race version of the 600, which most of the top competitors have.
Mm-hmm. Do you do other racing?
I used to. I stick to Arctic Man now.
Uh-huh. And then, so the rest of the winter you're just out recreationally riding around?
Yeah.
And what are your favorite spots to go to? Is that area one of the top ones?
That area is the top one. I really enjoy going up to Arctic Man. I like being inside the fence, on the race course, and that's the most fun that I have up there. It's really good mountain riding and deep snow. Other than that, you know, I ride out of Big Lake and Crooked Lake Trail out on the river. I like the high speed, you know, the bumpy stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not much of the high marker type guy. I like the speed. It's fun.
And your back is still in good shape at this point, huh?
So far, yes.
All right. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. In the studio with me, Len Story, a rider, pulls a skier in the snow machine skiing event called Arctic Man up in the Alaska Range on the Richardson Highway. And Tina Deptula, who is a longtime spectator and is, I guess, probably getting ready to pack up and get up there pretty soon here. Howard Thies was scheduled to be on, and I think we're having some trouble with communications. He was saying that they're getting the cell phone network installed up there, and he was going to be calling us on that network. And presumably we've not been able to reach him. He's not getting through to us anyway. But we've got some great guests here, and we'd love to hear from you, especially if you've ever been to this event. You know, what's your favorite part of it? Why do you keep going? Or if you've never been, kind of what would you like to know? If you're in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And Facebook, Outdoor Explorer. Tina, tell me about what do you do to get ready for like a week out there? I mean, obviously you've been doing it for a long time. It's probably like second nature, but I mean, what kinds of things do you pack up? What's your Costco run like before you head out of town?
Well, it's pretty big because we do a dinner for everyone. My husband and I make tacos for everyone. And we
for like 40 to 50 people.
This year we have one of the travel channels coming up, and they're supposed to be taping that night's dinner at campsite.
Yeah. I saw that, and that's on the Arctic Man website. It's talking about how the travel channel is coming to make a show about it.
There's actually two travel channels coming up. One of them is based out of San Francisco, and one's based out of New York. And the one out of San Francisco is already up there, and the other one's not coming up until the end of next week, like Thursday, I think they said, Wednesday or Thursday. And there's a lot of shopping, a lot of packing. There's a lot of stuff to take to make us comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that owns the tent in our group, it's a big tent, and he adds to it every year. He takes it to a seamstress. He has windows put in it. It's got a couple of heaters in it, patio-type heaters that he's cut the bottom off and hung from the top, and it's got a full fireplace in it with
a pipe
that goes out the top. And so we just set up camp in there. That's where we do all our cooking, and we, you know, ahead of time we order a couple of cords of wood, and we split that when we get up there and stack it all up, and it's just, there's a lot of preparation.
Yeah. Do people get a little bit competitive about who has the fanciest camp? I'm sure they must. Like, or at least go around and see what everybody's done, huh?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, you see people riding through all the different areas, you know, looking to see what's done.
Checking each other out.
Yeah. So, you know, we're kind of going all out this year because we know
you're going to be on TV.
TVs are coming up, so.
Yeah, you'll have to bring your best snowsuit, right?
You know, we don't really wear many snowsuits up there because it's all usually warm,
so warm,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're warm in the tent. We're warm during the day.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
So that's going to be interesting to find out what people outside think about this. I mean, because this is so unique to Alaska.
They seem extremely excited about it. They're emailing every day and calling every day and just trying to find out what it's all about. And
yeah, it's like getting to do something that's a bit different than their typical Hawaii resort or something.
Correct. What one of the channels is, they're kind of focusing on the motorhome mm-hmm. part and the spectator part and the racing part of the race. And the other one is more about the racing and the food. So different channels, different aspects of the whole function.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to visualize what like 10,000 plus people in all these motorhomes just looks like. I mean, it must look like a whole city spread out in that valley.
It does. I mean, you really can't You really can't see the whole area from one spot unless you're way up high. If you go up on the mountain, then you can see it. I'm sure Lynn can see it when he's up there.
But, I'm sure he's got other things on his mind, though.
But
he's
because
miles
there's
an hour.
So much snow, and Howard plows all the snow, and there's big banks, and so there's like cutouts of different rows where he parks people. So, you know, you kind of can't see from one row to the other unless you drive around.
I see. And are you basically on the lake then, or are
No, you're not on a lake at all.
Yeah, you're just on a pad, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, great. I'm really enjoying this. And we're going to have a break for a few minutes. And when I come back, I'll give those phone numbers again and hope to hear for some callers who might have been to Arctic Man or might sort of wonder what it's all about. You know, what would you like to know? And if you've been, what did you enjoy about it? Why did you go? So we'll be back in the second half to talk more about that. Right now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer Calendar. The Merry Marmot Festival at Arctic Valley in Anchorage is this Saturday from 9:30 to 6. There will be various types of races, including fat tire biking, snowshoeing, tubing, and downhill kayaking, plus live music, food, and beer. For more information, visit skiarctic.net. On Saturday, April 13th, the Alaska Randonneurs will be hosting a 100K or 200K bike ride starting from the Talkeetna Roadhouse. The Roadhouse is also hosting a special 6:30 a.m. breakfast for riders the day of the race. All participants must wear a helmet and comply with the RUSA's rules for riders. For more information on the Talkeetna 100K or 200K, visit alaskarondineers.org. If you don't know how to spell rondineers, just wait and I'll give you a cheat to get to that. On April 26th, an online public meeting will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. to discuss an amendment to the Lake Clark National Park General Management Plan. The plan will provide direction for the park over the next 15 to 20 years. It provides guidance for managing of park resources, visitor use, and general development. You can participate in the public meeting via Facebook or Twitter. And for links to that meeting or any of the other events, including the bike ride from Talkeetna, check out alaskapublic.org. That's our website. Go to alaskapublic.org and click on today's show or on the Outdoor Explorer icon. And one final thing I want to add, there is a avalanche advisory in effect for the Turnagain area. We're talking about snow machines, so it's important to be aware of this. Avalanche danger level is 2, which is moderate. Travel advice from the Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center is evaluate snow and terrain carefully and identify areas of concern. One more calendar item for you, which is a really neat one and fits in with what we're talking about today. On Saturday, April 13th, an interesting and unusual event is coming up in Girdwood, the AK Ski Meister Challenge. We've been talking about Arctic Man combining snow machines and alpine skis. This event is alpine and Nordic skiing and fat tire bikes. To tell us a little bit more about the race, we have on the phone with us today, Aaron Stiasny. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks for having me, Charles.
Thanks very much for being with us. So they're going to ski down Alyeska and then put on Nordic skis and then jump on their bikes? Is that the right idea?
That's the right idea. They're each going to be their own separate event. So it's not a continuous event, but there'll be an alpine ski in the morning. We're targeting the North Face, so it'll be a North Face traditional GS and Nordic race and a bike race in the afternoon.
And it will be a winner of each event, or will there be an overall Meister that you'll choose?
We're going to crown a Ski Meister for the men's and women's, as well as a junior Ski Meister, so that'll be Alpine Nordic. We also have some prizes for the triathlon, being a summer bike pass to Alyeska Resort.
Cool. So how do folks get involved in this?
easiest thing is just to go to our Facebook page, AK Ski Meister. And there's a registration link there. You can also visit the Challenge Alaska website or the Alyeska Ski Club website and find registration links.
All right. And if the weather's like it's been, then it's going to be amazing skiing down there this weekend, I would think.
This weekend down here is going to be awesome, and I think hopefully this weather continues and we can put on a great event.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, sure. We're talking about weekend after this weekend. So there's plenty of time for people to get on and register and go do it. So where'd you get the idea to do this, and how long have you been at it?
I've been at the Alaska Ski Club for a couple of years, and Challenge Alaska has had a fundraiser in the spring to benefit their adaptive race program. That adaptive race program is for athletes going onto the adaptive U.S. ski team. So I just partner with those guys. I know in the past, maybe a decade or two ago, we had a ski meister in the Anchorage community. But really, I think similar events are like the Homer Mofos. There used to be a Telepalooza here in Girdwood. So I'm really just trying to draw the Alpine and Nordic ski communities together.
Yeah, that's great. Well, what do you find? Do you find that there are a lot of folks who are really good at these all three of these events?
I think we have some hot contenders, yes, that are going to be, really good Nordic skiers, past Olympians, that also know how to click their heels down. So I think there's going to be a lot of contenders, yes.
Yeah, it'll be very competitive. And I guess a lot of skiers do spend the summer on their bikes to stay in shape, so it's probably pretty natural for them. Are they going to be biking over snow or biking on a hard trail, or how's that going to work?
It's going to be a mix. It is going to be on snow, portion on the new Girdwood Nordic Trails, and some single track out the Winter Creek Trail. And then the finish, we're going to finish a challenge for the bike race. So it's going to be a mix, but on snow, yes.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a lot of fun. So, and it's all a fundraiser for Challenge Alaska.
It's a split fundraiser for Challenge Alaska and then the Alaska Ski Club Juniors program. So
I got you.
We're all teamed together.
And if somebody wants to participate, but they're maybe not up to skiing the North Face, can they participate just in the Nordic and the bike ride?
Totally. You can participate in one event, be it Nordic or the bike ride. If you want to go for the forego the Alpine or do all three, we also have team participation. So you can join a team of three and sign up that way.
I got you. And the Nordic event is classic or skate or freestyle?
It's all of the above. We're not really designating which event. So I think it's going to be mostly those that are racing fast are going to be skating on that new trail system. Mm-hmm. But for some of the Alpine skiers that only have classic gear, that's fine too.
All right. All right. Well, great. Thanks so much for being with us, Aaron. We've been talking about the AK Ski Meister Challenge, which is coming up in Girdwood on Saturday, April 11th. And you can find a link to their page where you can sign up for that on our page. Go to alaskapublic.org, and there's a link to that and also to all the other events that we talked about, and also everything about Arctic Man, so everything you're looking at. So thanks a lot, Aaron. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Charles.
All right. Well, we'll be back with more of Outdoor Explorer after a short break when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. If you're listening in the evening, it is a recorded rebroadcast and will not be taking phone calls. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime, download podcasts, and see what's coming up on future programs at alaskapublic.org.
And we're back. It's Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Wolforth. We're talking today about Arctic Man, the whole scene up there, the social scene and the athletic scene and the just the outdoor fun stuff that happens. And it's coming up in a couple of weeks here, or in a week, basically. And there's still time to get involved in that. So check it out. There's some great photos on our website, too, that my guest, Tina Deptula, provided of, I'm scrolling right down right by right now, looking at the beer tent and of the skiers and a lot of fun, crazy stuff that happens. And I've been asked to repeat that announcement that I made earlier about the avalanche advisory for the Turnagain area. It's not super high, but there's an avalanche danger level 2, which is moderate, that they've asked us to announce. It's a travel advisory from the Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center to evaluate snow and terrain carefully and identify areas of concern, because we want certainly everybody to be safe as they're heading out this weekend to enjoy the snow. So in the studio today, Len Story. He's a rider. He's a multi-time winner of the race, pulling a skier over these mountains up in the Alaska Range as part of Arctic Man. And Tina Deptula, who's a longtime spectator and is, I guess, now going to be a movie star on the Travel Channel.
No.
As people watch the fun and craziness that takes place. And during the break, the phrase came up: whatever happens at Arctic Man stays at Arctic Man. So she's you know, I suppose that might be it certainly piques our imaginations. But I mean, it's kind of famous for the partying and just stuff that happens in terms of people kind of cutting loose up there. Anything you can give us, Tina? Or
well, no, because I didn't go in the early days, but my husband did. But I know that was the saying when all of the guys came back to town, was what happened at Arctic Man stayed at Arctic Man. So I don't really know what happened.
All right. Well, maybe we have listeners who can fill us in. If you want to get on the air with us, the number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And on Facebook, Outdoor Explorer. So, I mean, if it used to be just the guys, then it's gotten a bit more, slightly more domesticated over the years, or you're more families there, a little bit less just pure macho. Is that what you're telling me, Tina?
I think so. I think it's gotten way more family-oriented than it used to be back in the early days. And but there's still a lot of partying that goes on, and there's a lot of state troopers up there, so if you're going to drink, you better not be driving your snow machine, because you're going to lose it.
Uh-huh.
You're going to go to jail. And
yeah, well, so, I mean, that's what you, when you put together a powerful, fast snow machines and drinking, that, I guess, safety and kids, safety would obviously be a concern. So there's a lot of troopers that are.
I think he has somewhere around 30 or 40 state troopers up there.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's
covered.
Yeah, it's covered. Definitely covered.
Len, you were involved in some of the earlier years. Has it gotten more formal? Has it gotten more sort of official over the years?
It has gotten a lot more formal. I started going up to Arctic Man. Actually, the first year I went up just to watch was in 1989. And after I watched it the first time and just experienced the riding conditions up there, I had to go back. And then in 1990 was the first year that I competed in Arctic Man. I think the first times for Arctic Man were 6 minutes, 6 minutes and 12 seconds. I think Mac Bergsted and Rick Mistel won that first race. Uh-huh. We've gone from 6 minutes to we're close to breaking the 4 minute barrier now. There's
wow.
been a couple. I think the record up there now is 4 minutes, 1 second. So it's getting close to breaking that 4 minute barrier. And it has gotten a lot more formal. Back in the day, it was everybody was just using their recreational equipment. It went from using recreational equipment to getting into speed skiing. The speed skiing equipment consisted of skis that were 240 centimeters in length.
And, oh, wow, those are huge.
Yeah, they were huge skis. They were using speed helmets and the rubber suits. So it was real, you know, it was a lot of fun watching those guys all dressed up in these speed suits, you know, with no poles or anything else. And just, we would be down, again, off the start, maybe 1,000 feet down, and we had radar guns up there. They were doing 85 miles an hour, 1,000 feet down off the top of the start. And just when they come by, it just has this big whoosh sound.
Wow.
And it was really.
So the rubber suit is basically for the air resistance.
For the air resistance, mm-hmm. in the Dragon. So it went from evolving into the speed suits and going to that route to trying to encourage more people to participate in Arctic Man, to go more back to what, you know, just the average skier or more of the competitive skier could get. So now they're racing on anywhere from, I think, 215 to 220 20-centimeter skis with normal ski suits and normal helmets now.
But it sounds like you're still pushing the time, so it hasn't slowed you down too much.
I think the track preparation, last year there was a lot of snow up there, so the track was a little bit soft, but Howard does a real good job about grooming the trail, and having a fast track is the key to the speed. And each year it gets a little bit better. They have, you know, the better groomers or more groomers up there, and individuals that, you know, put in a nice track. So hopefully this year that they put in a fast track, because it would be fun to see somebody, preferably ourselves, break that 4-minute barrier. But it would be fun to see.
Yeah. We've got a caller. Alden is calling from Fort Rich. Alden, sounds like you've been to Arctic Man before.
Yes, I have. I haven't made the last couple years, but I did do 9 years in a row, and had a great time every year. There's some fluctuation with how good or bad people thought the troopers were, but their presence is definitely necessary, because some people don't know how to restrain themselves.
Right. I guess good or bad could be from your perspective, right?
Right.
So what's your favorite part about doing it? Why do you go?
Well, those years I was involved with the beer tent, and so we were there for the whole week each time, and then we absolutely rode every day for recreation. And my job involved with that was helping set up, making sure all the motorhomes were hooked up to electricity, and it included we had motorhome for the band, and we had another motorhome for the security, the in the beer tent security people, and then we were involved with the cooking for that same group.
So you had
We also cooked for Howard's employees and volunteers. A lot of volunteer help is what makes that happen.
Yeah, it must be. That's because it's a huge event. It's not that expensive to go.
Right. But especially for the people who are busy working every day, just having a setup where they could just come by and get sandwiches or come by and have a hot meal at the end of the day, we were pretty popular.
Yeah, I'm sure. So you mentioned a band. So there in the beer tent, you'd have a band and dancing and stuff like that?
Some years there was a band, and in conjunction with a disc jockey type, you know, playing music. And then some years there weren't the band aspect. And that's usually just for the last 3 days of the event. And that's when the beer tent is its busiest.
Mm-hmm. So
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I have a brother with a rock band. I think there's nothing he would like better in this world than to be shipped out from New Jersey to the Alaska Range and play in a big tent. That just sounds great.
Yeah. It was good. A lot of good memories, and it is a party. It is just a good party, based on riding and the love of riding, and that's hard to beat. And the weather gets so good that when people get to the top and do the spectator type there, where they come across and they clock the riders with the speed guns. The people got their shirts off. I mean, it's nice. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling, Alden.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Good luck to everybody who goes.
Yes. And now we have another caller. Rick is calling from Anchorage. Rick?
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Good afternoon. Good. Hey, listen, I just, I haven't been to Arctic Man, but I am a big fan and participant in Burning Man. And just wondering if your Arctic Man professionals there, if they are aware of participants who do both of those events.
Yeah, well, Burning Man is a thing that happens out in, like, the Arizona desert?
No, it's the Black Rock Desert of Nevada.
Oh, okay.
About an hour and a half east, northeast of Reno.
And you've been to it?
About nine years in a row, yeah.
It's like the last call I've been to Arctic Man 9 years in a row. I don't know. I have the sense that there's maybe differences, similarities, but it's a very different crowd. Len, do you know anything about that other event?
I don't. I haven't never heard of the Burning Man.
Oh, really?
I've seen a few at Arctic Man, though.
Never heard of it.
well, Burning Man is certainly, it's a huge party. Sometimes people think that's all it is. In fact, Burning Man, which takes place over the course of about 10 days, it's a weekend, two weekends with a week in the middle. It is a very big focus on leave no trace and self-sufficiency because you are in a desert environment, much like, you know, Arctic Man puts you in a winter environment. Even though it's spring and it's getting warm, there's still the potential for, you know, things to go wrong. But Burning Man, in addition to the 24 hours a day things that are going on everywhere in that city, it's a city of about 50,000 when it's at its peak. At that time, it's like the third largest city in Nevada, which is pretty phenomenal. But it has a huge art component. And, I mean, we're talking art from sculptures that could fit in the back of your pickup truck or maybe even your mailbox in some places, but also art pieces, art structures that are as large as a two- or three-story building, some phenomenal art. And, of course, some of that art is burned at the end of the event, and that's up to the artist or artists who are involved in the production, whether that's something they want to burn at the end of the event or disassemble and, take. Sometimes some sculptures, for example, have been gone from Burning Man to become permanent displays at museums or, around the country. It's an amazing thing. And you're talking about volunteers. I'm a medical person, and the first year that I, through circumstances, just found I was going, I got in touch with Burning Man Org and became part of the emergency services department. And so I go and volunteer my services, and that pays my ticket in.
I see. Well, thanks. Thanks for telling us about it. It sounds there's some similarity, but our two experts here have never heard of the other event, so probably not too much overlap. But thanks for calling.
Hey, well, thanks. I hope you guys have a great time. I'll get up there one of these days, and when I do, I'll bring a little Burning Man with me.
All right, great. So I want to make sure folks know about how they can get involved in an Arctic Man or Go. It's really as simple as going to the website and registering and then driving on up there, I believe. I mean, there's nothing special about it. And the website has a calendar, which we've also linked to our website. It sounds like things will really get rolling like the weekend of the 12th. That's when it sort of all comes together. It sounds like there's preparation in the week before that, but that's sort of when most people are there. And do most people just come up for that one big weekend, or what's the pattern?
It gets pretty full up there all throughout the week.
The whole week.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think the race itself is actually on the 12th, right, on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other races other than Arctic Man also. There's a hill climb, right, Lynn, I think?
There's a hill climb that goes on just after the race, and then there's a snow cross that they have, I think, both on Friday and Saturday at the beer tent.
Okay. And for spectators, I'm looking at some of the photos that we have online. It looks like they're just sort of standing out there in the snow, right? I mean, there's no, like, bleachers or anything. And if there's that many people there, but it's a huge course, so there's plenty of places to watch, I guess.
There's plenty of places to watch. And if I was going up there to watch, I would start at the starting line or at the top, and then I would work my way down to the finish line, because after the race is over, it's just kind of like a wave of snow machines that come down into the finish line. So it would be good to start on top and then work your way down. And there's plenty of places to watch the race. If you want to watch the snow machine pull section through the canyon, there's all kinds of different vantage points. So it's unlimited to where you can watch it, and it's 5 miles. So
basically outside the barriers of whatever, you can just ride anywhere. So you could just like find whatever vantage point you want.
Yes, you can ride anywhere as long as it's not on or across the track.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you better be careful about that.
Yeah.
All right, so we have another caller. Graham is calling from Girdwood. Graham?
Hey, Lynn. Hey, Charles. How you guys doing?
Great.
Good. I work as an avalanche forecaster for the Chugach National Forest Avalanche Information Center, and we'll be up at Arctic Man again this year. I actually raced against Len last year, and he smoked me. I'm gonna take more of a spectator role this year, and just wanted to share with your listeners that we're gonna do a free Hoodoo Mountain Snowpack and Avalanche Awareness event on Wednesday of Arctic Man next week, and just invite everyone to come and be involved.
All right. So, how do they find that? How do they hook up with you?
Yeah, this is going to be in conjunction with Alaska Mining and Diving Supplies, so we'll meet at the AMDS camp, which you can't miss if you're in the Arctic Man city. And we'll meet at about 2 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon and head out in the field for a free snowpack and avalanche assessment, try to wrap our heads around what the primary avalanche concerns for the week in the Hoodoo Mountains are going to be.
I see. And within the terrain up there, is there areas where people can be relatively, I mean, we're talking about families going up and kids. Is there areas where people can be relatively safe with respect to avalanches and other places where they might want to be more careful or have more expertise before they get into them?
Yeah, you know, the Hoodoos are it's a unique little mountain range. There's definitely lots and lots of areas to be safe and avoid avalanche terrain altogether. That being said, there's also a lot of avalanche terrain in the Hoodoos, and there have been avalanche fatalities at Arctic Man in the past. So I'm going to be up there with the Avalanche Center just helping to spread the word and try to inform people of safe ways to travel around in the backcountry and with respect to avalanches.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you'd be a great guest for a future show, Graham. Thanks very much for calling in. And we were announcing, I guess we received an advisory from you guys about the Turnagain area, about moderate avalanche concern right now coming up this weekend. How does it look this weekend in our area?
Yeah, it looks like it's we've kind of been in a melt-free cycle all week down here. So real cold at night, real warm during the days, and kind of loosening the snow up, increasing avalanche danger right around afternoon, 2 to 5 or 6 o'clock. So it looks like temps are going to drop a little bit this weekend, which will probably decrease the avalanche danger in and around the Turnagain Pass area. But the best thing for folks to do is just to check our website. Avalanche.org is the best way to find it. And we update 7 days a week by 7 a.m. every single morning for the most current avalanche conditions in the on the Chugach National Forest.
All right. Well, great. Thanks. That was a great call. I'm glad you called in.
Yeah, good talking to you guys, Len. We'll see you up there. And just one more shout out. We're gonna the friends of the Chugach Avalanche Center, along with ANBS, are sponsoring a team in the men's ski division this year. So we're gunning for you, Len.
We'll see you up there. Thanks, Graham.
All right, sounds good. Bye bye.
That sounds like fun. All right. Well, we've got a few minutes left. If there are any other folks who want to talk about their experiences up there, what the most fun they've had, or the most interesting or bizarre experience, 550-8433, outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752, and on Facebook, Outdoor Explorer, and we put comments on the air when we get them in time. I imagine that with some, 10,000 people or however many are there, there must be a certain number of people who are yahoos, troublemakers, or whatever, and that could be a problem. That's just my prejudice, but just my thought that's coming out that, a lot of alcohol, a lot of maybe young people running around. Is there any kind of problem like that, or is that something that is dealt with in some way, or maybe the troopers are able to keep it under control? There have been other festivals around Alaska that, there was one up in Talkeetna that sort of they put an end to just because they couldn't get that part of it under control. Tina, I mean, do you have a perspective on that?
Well, I think probably in the past it was a lot worse, but the trooper presence is so huge now. And they are up and down all the parking lots all night long, patrolling. And like every 15 minutes, I know I'll see one go by our area. And so I don't think it's as big as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't kept track of it, but they certainly patrol it very well.
But you feel safe when you're up there. You don't feel like...
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have probably, I don't know, at least 2, maybe 4 bouncer type guys at the door of the tent, and you don't get in there unless you show your ID. It doesn't matter how old you are. Uh-huh. You're not going to get in there unless you have an ID.
Uh-huh.
So, I think that part of the problem is going away more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing.
Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of people are going up with their own group. They're not just necessarily going up to find somebody up there, but like your group, you're saying, is a big group of 40 or 50 people, kind of sticking with your own group in your own party tent.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people do that. We have what we call our tent night, which we go over to the big tent on Friday nights and just kind of look around and see what's going on over there, and we usually come back to our tent and finish partying there. I think a lot of people do that. There's a lot of family.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of family up there.
And do they normally have a band playing and music in the party tent, or how does that?
They do. Yeah, uh-huh. I think they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Len, your thoughts on that? And, you know, folks who maybe are not as safe as they should be running around on their snow machines and stuff like that are not a problem.
And actually, in the past, it was, you know, at some times of the week, very unsafe. You know, you had individuals that were, you know, drinking alcohol and running snow machines all over the place. But the troopers have done a great job. And over the past several years, it's been, I feel very safe up there. And it is more of a family atmosphere. And, you know, just about anybody can go up there. If you don't have a spot reserved, I mean, obviously I've seen people, you know, sleep in the front seat of their truck to, you know, on the back of their snow machine bed or whatever, but there's always a place. I think Howard welcomes everybody up there to stop by. The amenities are all there. There's places to eat. There's fuel up there. There's firewood up there and everything. So a lot of people take
so
all that.
So like there's like restaurants and tents, that kind of thing?
There's restaurants and tents and food wagons and so forth. And in the beer tent, you can get food. And there's other vendors that sell all kinds of things up there. So it is all the amenities are there. A lot of people bring their own. But if you don't have your own, they have them there also.
Cool. And it sounds like they also have some kind of little cell network that they set up so people can make phone calls.
They do. The cell reception up there over the past several years, I think AT&T provides a cell reception there, and it's been fantastic. So not only from the top of the mountain, you can get cell reception pretty much anywhere on site.
Uh-huh. That's an amazing world we live in, that you can do that now out on Summit Lake, out in the middle of the Alaska range.
Yeah, and you see everybody just like in town, and everybody's texting and looking at Facebook and so on. So
that's great. I guess we've got some photos of the red rubber suit that you were talking about put up on our website, so people can see what that looks like. It sounds crazy. It sounds like a lot of fun though. Yeah. So it's not only a suit, but then a helmet that comes back over the back of his head and these things on his legs to deal with the
resistance. With the big fairings. I didn't edit the photo, so hopefully it's appropriate on there.
No, it looks okay, yeah. It's not too close up. So do new people get in this race all the time, or is it that they take enough expertise that it might be kind of tough to break into?
No, I think, you know, there's new teams up there. When, you know, Tyson Johnson got into it, I think back in 2002 with Sasha Gross, and, you know, they came right into it. I think they won their first event, you know, that they participated in, and there's others that can come up. And there's some great athletes out there, both snow machine drivers and skiers, that can definitely compete in it. And there's, you know, there's individuals that come up there just for the experience and to be able to race in the race too. But yeah, if people want to compete,
$25,000 on the line.
There's $25,000 on the line, and you know, they pay back, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 places too. So, you know, the entry fees, I believe, are $800 for the teams, and all that money goes back into the purse also.
Okay. And your last victory was what year?
2009.
All right. So it's time to turn it up, huh?
Yes.
All right. Well, this has been really fun. I want to thank you, Len Story, rider, competitor. You'll be riding in a couple of weeks here in Arctic Man. And Tina Deptula, who just goes and enjoys the party tent and takes a whole bunch of people. It's been really interesting, and I've enjoyed it. Next week on Outdoor Explorer, we're going to be talking about ski jumping meeting cross-country skiing in the Nordic sport of Nordic combined. It's an emerging sport in Alaska, and I'll be talking to leaders from the national team who are visiting to develop new talent here in Alaska. Join us next week at 2 to learn what's happening in our growing Nordic combined community. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Kristen Spack is our producer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Charles Wolforth. Happy trails.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.